Do you know what it will entice you to clean? If your house smells like a beach afterward and it doesn't smell like, you know, cleaning products. Well, enter Clorox. They can transform your space into a tropical getaway by upgrading your cleaning routine with coconut-scented Clorox Scentiva. It smells like coconut, it cleans like Clorox, and it feels like inspiration. With a refreshing scent that will leave your home clean and fresh, elevating any room into an oasis. Now you can express your style and get shiny clean. Get Clorox Scentiva at a nearby retail store, also available in grapefruit or lavender scents. This is Ashley Iaconetti from the Ben and Ashley I Almost Famous podcast. Tennessee just sounds perfect. Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure. To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
All right, ladies, let's be real. Who here actually enjoys shaving their legs? Yeah, absolutely no one. I know this. Get this, Nair. Yes, Nair, the OG has leveled up. They've got these new sensational shower creams and body creams that smell absolutely amazing. I know this is not the smell that you're thinking of from the 90s when your mom first pulled this out for you. These smells will light up your bathroom, honestly. They'll make your shower experience better.
It smells like a spa, actually.
Oh, yeah. And how do you know this?
Well, I mean, Nair's in the household. So anytime Nair's used, it smells like a spa.
You probably don't even know what it does.
It takes hair away.
It works in as little as 3 minutes. You don't have to bother with nicks, cuts, shaves. And the smooth lasts so much longer than shaving. You're also not going to have to deal with any of those shave bumps or anything like that, because the bumps are just as annoying as the nicks, right? Nair's new sensational shower and body creams are free of all the nasty chemicals like phthalates and sulfates. You can feel good about what you're putting on your skin, and you can have a little bit of a me time moment with Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself, and as Ben smelled for himself, and he likes it. It's Ben approved. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is Ben and Ashley I, Almost Famous, In Depth.
It is the off season for the Almost Famous podcast. And one of Ashley and I, that's wrong, right? We're going to yell that for that.
No,
like
Ashley
and me.
And my. Ashley and my.
One of Ashley and my's favorite things to do is to sit down in the off season and talk to some of Bachelor Nation's favorites about them as people, their lives, what they're learning, what they're experiencing, what their future is. This is an in-depth episode with Dr. Joe Park, and we could not be more pumped for it. Ashley, you've been waiting for this one for a while. What are you feeling?
Oh, I'm very excited. I'm just so excited to have an in-depth, and especially with such a fan favorite from the past season or two. And Joe was just announced as like the first contestant to be going to Paradise, I believe confirmed, because Rob Mills did tweet that out a couple weeks ago. So we'll talk to him about that. And then at the end of this episode, we'll have headlines.
Let's do it. Hey, Ashley, let's bring him in. Dr. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, what's up, guys? Not much. Just, you know, just living it.
That's the way to do it. Just living it.
All right, well, Joe, so with these mini in-depths or in-depths, whatever you want to call it, we really start with the beginning of somebody's life, you know, their childhood. Oh. So can you tell us about your nuclear family, what your childhood was like, how many siblings you have, how happy of a marriage did your parents have, all that?
Yeah, dude, I'm into it. Yeah, for sure. So it was a dark and stormy night. It was March 31st, 1984.
March 31st. Your birthday is in 2 days.
It's coming.
Happy birthday.
It's coming. Yeah, it's coming. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. But now these birthdays are not an occasion I look forward to. Now I kind of avoid them at this point of my life. So, but thank you.
37, huh?
37. I know. Don't remind me. But yeah. So I grew up in Long Island. I'm one of five kids. My parents have been happily married since 1981. And they still go for walks. They still send me pictures of them just going on little like hikes and adventures, walking the dog. I'm the second of five children. Fortunately, we all live in New York, so we see each other not infrequently, which is such a blessing.
That's
nice. It's beautiful. I have a lot of cousins and nieces and nephews running around, or like second cousins, actually. I have one nephew. Official nephew, but you know, my cousins have kids. I think they're second cousins, so a lot of them running around. And spent most of my life on Long Island, aside from school in DC for 4 years and worked there for 2 years. And I traveled a bit, you know, before med school for like 6 months around Central America, kind of bumming around Central America for a little bit. But aside from that, I've mostly been in New York pursuing this whole medicine thing, which tends to take up a fair amount of time. And yeah, that's kind of like the really like nuts and bolts of it.
What part of Central America?
My trip, pre-med school was, I did it all other countries, in Central America. I mostly stationed in Nicaragua, but really traveled through all of them, just looking for, different surf spots.
Yeah.
Throughout. So it was a beautiful trip, and, I've been pretty much back every year since then, minus this past year, obviously.
I spend two months of my life every year in Honduras. So
get out of here.
No, yeah. So 2 months every year for the last like 10 years, I spend in Honduras and San Pedro Sula, like El Progreso area. So I know all about Central America. We got to talk about it. There's a lot we could do down there together. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Oh, dude, it's amazing down there. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
On Instagram, I was seeing all your intense surfer photos. How did a kid from Long Island get to be so good on the waves?
You know, actually, there's a big surf scene in Long Island. I grew up right next to a town called Long Beach, New York, not to be confused, Long Beach, California. Actually, a lot of great surfers come out of there. One of the biggest, best big wave surfers, Will Scudin, is from Long Beach, California. I mean, Long Beach, New York. So started surfing a little bit on Long Island. And then, you know, as the years went by, I visited California, was there for like a month and surf there, and then since then just been surfing Long Island, Central America. I've surfed in like Vancouver, I've done Ecuador, so I've been traveling a lot for surfing here and there. Bali was a beautiful trip. So yeah, it's possible, man. When this hurricane's come through, it's like, it's terrible for most people, but surfers are like, wait, hurricane, like, yeah. What? So it's kind of a weird, you know, but yeah.
Well,
you know, Long Island ever since.
One of the things, as we're talking about your childhood, and I think we're going to get to it here, is a good time for it. You on the show and after the show, right? The show is always something, and it can portray people all sorts of ways, but it's usually fairly accurate. But one of the things that always stood out to us was you always had a smile on your face. You were always like a level-headed, kind of like a connector. Like if that makes sense. Like, you could tell that you didn't want to add anything, any drama more to the scene than there already was. Where does that come from? Because even after the show, like watching on social media and hearing about you through friends, like where does that spirit and that desire to just connect and love on people well come from?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know where it comes from per se. I will say I've got amazing parents. I mean that. Like, my mom is like the kindest, sweetest, like most caring individual. I could just regale you with stories of her just being like just like otherworldly kind. And my dad has always been a very social, very like, he's been a connector in his life, like politically. And I think it comes from there. And I think just being an empathetic human being goes so far in life. And I think it would help in any situation, including the situations that are facing our society now. We're all just trying to do the best we can. And I think once you realize that, it's like nobody wants to be bad. Everyone just thinks, you know, everyone's thinking they're doing the right thing or they're trying to like be good. They just, their message is misconstrued or they don't know how to convey it. You know, they can't convey it in the way they want to convey it. And it gets the message is garbled, but I don't think anyone thinks I'm going to be a jerk and I'm going to show the world I'm a jerk. And yeah. I think just knowing that, like, nobody thinks that. And just starting from there, I think you could just be like, hey, like that sounded really wrong and that came across kind of aggressive, but like, what do you mean by that? Like, you like, just go and, you know, just like develop that further, like, you know, like unpack that and tell me what you really mean. Cause I know it's not exactly what it sounds like.
I love that feedback. With your parents, did they have any influence on you wanting to be a doctor? Did you have that kind of drive naturally, or do you think that was something your parents instilled in you?
So my parents are like, my dad came here, you know, dollar in a dream. Both of them literally peddled in Chinatown for years. And then eventually got enough to open a shop and sold like clothes for a period of time. And then now they opened up, like, again, still just have a store that sells uniforms. So super humble, super blue collar, started from the bottom. And
were they immigrants? More than anything,
yes, they were immigrants. Yeah, they came to the US in the late 70s and early 80s.
From where? What city were they living in?
They came from South Korea. My dad's from like a very small fishing village, on the east coast of South Korea. And, my mom is from around Seoul and, okay. They both came in like the early 80s, and I think the late 70s. And, again, just like literally just sold trinkets, like on the street, you know, and like literally just had a table and sold little American flags, little like, really the American dream. And they started from there. And then from there, it's just their work ethic, I think, was instilled in us at a very young age. And I think all five of their kids, like, obviously we love them and we appreciate them and we know how hard they worked. And so I think you can't help, you know, being surrounded by that for however many years, at least 18 years. And then more thereafter, you can't help but like be influenced and have that be kind of infused into you. And I just feel lucky that I was born into such a beautiful family and awesome parents.
Oh, that's so sweet. I love that story.
Yeah. So a little off, but I'm intrigued. How did they meet?
I was going to ask. Yeah.
Oh, that's, you know, that's a good question and not completely unrelated, like to The Bachelor. They met in the US. And they were like taking a couple classes at Hunter. Neither of them graduated college. And they were taking classes at Hunter College in New York City. And they're just taking a couple classes just like as a survey courses, you know, just to see getting their feet wet in the American education system. And they met in class and 6 months later, my dad proposed. And my mom had actually kind of been seeing somebody at the time. And this person, I think, had gone away to Korea for a bit and then came back. He's like, what? Like, what?
Yeah.
Like,
shocker.
For a couple of months. And this is what happened, you know? And And oddly, and it's like a trend in my family, my younger brother who's married with happily married for a few years, for like 9 years, and my only nephew is from my younger brother. Mm-hmm. They got engaged after 9 months. And my older brother got married last year, and he got engaged after like 8 months of dating, I think. So like moving fast, like when you know, you in my family, like, you know, and that's kind of one of the reasons why I was like, the bachelor or the bachelorette might be right up my alley. Like once you like see it and you like it, like maybe that's it, all it takes, like, and you're in and you just know. So it's kind of weird in that way.
You are well suited for this. That's awesome to hear, nice. Especially since we know that you're headed to paradise. We'll get there later. I want to talk about, this little stat that I've kind of come up with, and I really do need to do like a little bit more numerical research on it. I've mentioned this a couple of times on the podcast. It seems that when it comes down to the final four, at least 75% of the final four and about 80% of the top 10 on The Bachelor and Bachelorette happen to have parents who are still married, which obviously defeats the national odds. So do you feel like your parents' marriage and how happy it was one of the reasons that, like, you feel like you're a hopeless romantic type that was drawn to the show?
It's a good question. You know, I would say in part, again, what I described, their kind of whirlwind kind of meeting the marriage definitely was part of it. And also, yeah, I think when you come from a place where you see love and you kind of have that example growing up and you see it throughout, and sometimes it's not always like, you know, unicorns and rainbows, but you see arguments here and there. They weren't like, you know, devoid of that. But for the vast majority, it was like love and, again, just like spending time with each other. And I think when you have that structure in place, I think when you can recognize like love, you can just see it, and you see it in yourself. You see the comfort you have with somebody. You see how much, let's say this, it's like when you interact with somebody, you kind of, I think based on the interactions you see or I see with my parents, it's like there's a level of comfort, the level of understanding that I always see with my parents. And I think that's something I look for as well. I think we all look for it. And I think when you see it a lot, you can recognize it when you have it with somebody else. And it's rare, don't get me wrong, it's not easy to find, but when you find it, it's special. And I think having that, being around it all the time, you can recognize it when you find it. So I would say for that reason, I think maybe it's the same way for all these final fours, that they also they're open to it. And they're like, I'll know it when I find it. And if I found it in this person, then I'll pursue it and see what happens.
I apologize if I missed this or forgot about it from the show, but have you been in love before? Like, have you dated, had serious relationships leading up to the show?
Yeah, definitely. I've had a 3-year relationship, and she was a great girl. And I still, you know, have very fond memories and nothing but good feelings towards her. I've had a number of like 1 to 2 year relationships prior to that. So I'm pretty much a serial monogamist in my life. That's what I've been in my life. And again, that's another reason why I was like, let me try this thing, because, you know, I'm ready for that next step. Obviously, the worst thing would be to force it and to rush into it and take that step with somebody who may not be right for you. And so I'm still waiting to find that person. Obviously, I'm still like not going to just take that leap. I want to know that it's the right step and we're right for each other. But I've definitely had a lot of love, and I'm grateful for that as well, because this is kind of weird, but I kind of think we're all worthy of love on one hand. Can I curse on this show? Is this PG?
Yeah.
I will not do it.
Yeah, you can curse.
We're all kind of assholes too on the inside. You know what I mean? Like, we're all kind of like we're all not great human beings. We're all like selfish-ish also. So we're both like kind of dogs, especially gut men, but we're also all deserving of love. I think there is this dichotomy where it's like, you got to like, when you're first meeting somebody and first like you know, courting somebody, you have to be like, oh, this is why I'm the man. And then afterwards, like, later you're like, man, but I hope they accept me for the piece of crap that I really am. And it's not really like, I'm going extreme too. Like, hope they can accept me for all my faults and all my like insecurities and everything after. So this weird like interplay between like this uber confidence and this like real, like, you know, I think, at least for me it is, but I think a lot of the guys, my friends I speak to, is the same thing. So
we totally understand. I've said multiple times on the show that like, I find it annoying when people are like, I deserve love. Like, I can't believe I was cut. I deserve love. It's like, yeah, like I'm pretty sure very few people out there, horrible, horrible people, may not deserve love, but like
pretty sure
everybody on The Bachelor deserves love.
It's, I will tell you this, Joe, Dr. Joe, if you find love on this television show, that's the mission. If you find love in this experience, I think the internet would break. I don't know of one cast member in the last year to 2 years that will be coming on the Paradise that would be more cheered for than you. You like grasped the hearts of people in a way that's like, let's, if you happen to have your love story play out and we can watch it, people are going to freak out. Now, no pressure, but I'm going to be one of those people. I'm going to be at my home, tears in my eyes, cheering for you, and just the whole experience in general. Hey, let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to dig in a little bit more to Joe's life, his experience coming up that's going to be on Bachelor in Paradise. Let's get him to confirm that first. We have had it tweeted, but let's get Joe to confirm it and also talk about what's going on in the Asian community when it comes to Asian hate. Hey, we'll be back with the Almost Famous Podcast.
There's nothing like having a clean space. I can't say that I have it a ton with a toddler, but when I do, it's magical. And I also love it when I can add a little bit of my own sort of favorite candle, favorite scent, favorite throw blanket, you know, just express your personal style while the space is perfectly clean. Well, that's where Clorox Scentiva comes in, because Clorox have these clean scents that'll fit your vibe. With coconut, grapefruit, or lavender, you can discover your own signature scent. It's clean, so it's that trusted clean that you know that you get with Clorox, and it's captivating with scents that just can speak to you. With a powerful, clean, and refreshing scent, Clorox Scentiva cleans like Clorox and feels like confidence. Get yours now at a retail store near you. Diaper duty. It's the adventure no one warns you about when you're expecting, right? Well, fear not. Pampers Swaddlers features a blowout barrier at the back waist that helps prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Not only are Pampers Swaddlers total game changers, they have the hottest baby gift trend for 2024, the Pampers Diaper Stash, an online diaper fund where friends and family can contribute a group gift so that your diaper stockpile never runs out. I love this idea. Here's how it works. You create a diaper stash account, share it with your tribe, watch the stash grow, gift it to the parents, and voila. They use the stash funds to snag Pampers diapers and wipes anywhere, anytime. It's not just a gift. It's a stash of joy. Ensuring that those parents-to-be are stocked up without the guesswork. So whether you're a parent in the trenches or the ultimate gift guru, make 2024 the year of leak-free happiness. Pampers Swaddlers and the diaper stash. Because parenting should be an extraordinary journey, not a messy one.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. So right now, obviously, summer's coming up, and it's a big time of the year for so many. Well, your social battery right now, probably for most people, is feeling a little drained, or maybe you're bursting with energy, and you're so excited to get out there and talk to people. I know for me, a lot of times, I have to moderate my social engagements because I get drained very fast, very easy, and I need time at home.
Yep, me too, especially while pregnant.
It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter.
What's the right amount of socializing for you? How do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time, no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/almost today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/almost.
Let's talk about something we all can relate to. Hair removal. Yeah, not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Nicks, cuts, razor burns. Ugh. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. For real, Nair's new scents turned my bathroom into a spa.
You guys, I remember when my mom gave me like the first bottle of Nair to use on my upper lip. And I was like, this is so awful, but I do like need to do it. but the smell so close to my nose for so long. The worst part of like the every other week or whatever I would do it. Now it smells incredible. Like there's Moroccan argan oil and orange blossom shower cream that you can use. It's like a pampering experience. You put it on your legs, let it sit there for a little bit. And it's so much better than shaving. They also have like rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, soothing aloe and water lily body cream. Really anything you could think of to get rid of your hair in the most pleasant way, Nair has it. They have new shower and body creams that are so easy to apply and they work in as little as 3 minutes. And if you're going to shave more parts than just your legs, think about what you can do in 3 minutes with Nair. And the skin smooth feeling lasts so much longer than shaving. Like I just mentioned, you can use it not just on your legs, but on your arms, your underarms, even your bikini area. And we all know that with summer around the corner, that's a place you need it. Nair has turned the hair removal process into a sensorial experience. The scents are just amazing. And when I say that my bathroom smells like a spa, I really mean it. So check it out. The new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
We're back with Dr. Joe Park. Dr. Joe, when did you decide that you wanted to be a doctor?
Oh, that's a good question. I kind of always thought, like, if you looked at my like fifth grade, what do you want to do when you grow up? It was pediatrician. So I've kind of always wanted to be a doctor. Mm-hmm. It just took a little bit longer. You know, I worked for 4 years before med school because I wasn't sure I wanted to do it, but I wasn't sure I was ready to commit to it. But I'm super glad that I had that time because it really helped me create kind of like a philosophy as to why. I mean, I was trying to hammer down why I wanted to be a doctor, and I really felt like during those 4 years, I was able to form a good rationale as to why, like, I want, that's something I want to pursue for the rest of my life. And so I'm grateful for that time as well, to kind of develop as a human before, like, being around humans in their time of need, their most dire and some of their hardest times of their lives. And I think it takes, you should have, in my own opinion, some life experience and some level of obviously empathy and understanding of people before you jump into that. So yeah, I was happy that I had that time.
I feel like people must tell you all the time, you must get the best reviews on your bedside manner. Is this true?
I get decent reviews on bedside manner. Yeah. But I think it's just like, I love people, you know, and I just think it's such a privilege to be with them at their moment of need. Like today, I actually had a 5-year-old girl who needed an appendectomy, and I was relieving somebody who was on overnight, and she's in the room. She's just rolled into the room, and with this weird shift change where I didn't get to meet her before, and she's just laying there crying, like just really sad because she's without her parents in this cold operating room. And I just wonder, like, hey, you're gonna be fine, like. Don't worry. Like, you're just gonna take a nap. Ugh. I wish I was taking a nap instead of you. Oh my gosh. Like, you're gonna do great. And I showed her all the stuff. Like, hey, this is just a light. We can put this on your finger. You know, it's just like, nothing sharp. It's literally just a light. You hear that beep, hear that beeping? That's your heart. You know, like, just listen to it for a sec. Pretty cool. And so it's just like, you know, yeah, again, it's a privilege to be with this person. And then, you know, just to like, cause yeah, I mean, it's such a crazy field. It's such, medicine is so crazy to see people so sick, and, you know, honestly, even see inside their bodies. It's such an intimate relationship you have with people. And again, it's not to be taken lightly. And so I love it. And it's super interesting too. And I love it. So
after that,
yeah.
I just have to ask, if they put you on a lot of pediatric cases, I have to, like, I get very interested in this medical stuff. I've talked plenty of times. My dad is an anesthesiologist like you.
Yeah. Yeah. We talked about that.
Yeah. And I'm having this 33-year-old crisis that I wish that I became a dermatologist. I'm like, oh God, is it too late to go back to school? It is, because I didn't do pre-med. Look, if I could just jump into it, I may do it, but I'd have like 15 years of school. It actually is probably too late for me. But do they put you on a lot of pediatric cases? Because that was just the sweetest story you just shared.
I don't look for them. Sometimes they just kind of fall into your lap. And so I love kids. And again, in another life, I would probably be a pediatrician. But yeah, I mean, happy to take care of young, old, and everything in between. Seriously, whatever comes my way, I'm happy to see and take care of.
I have a couple buddies who are anesthesiologists. What is your source of entertainment during surgery? Because I know that you sometimes you have these long surgeries. Your job isn't done, but it's kind of set up. What do you do while the surgery is going on?
That's a really good. There's a lot. I mean, it's kind of be weird, but like, you always have to be aware of the monitors, obviously, yeah, because those monitors represent the patient's life. But sometimes during these stretches, I have a stretch routine. Actually, I do like a 15-minute stretching routine where I'm like, I'm looking at the monitors, I'm listening to the monitors, but I'm still like doing some arms, like doing hip flexors. Yeah. So like, I'll stretch, and like, now the surgeons know, like, oh, it's just Joe doing his thing. Like, they're not like, what the hell is it? Like, because they'll see me like squatted on the ground, like, what the hell is this guy doing? But
yeah,
you know, I'm staring at the monitors, just like, but like in a weird low lunge, and yeah, like, so that. Do that. Sometimes I have like these like Spanish flash. I'm learning Spanish. I picked up Spanish during the quarantine. So like, I like, you know, flashcard here and there. Like once in a while, I look at a flashcard here and there. I'll look at the surgery. There's so many different surgeries, and everything's always changing. And so that's the beautiful thing about medicine and anesthesia. There's always something new. There's always something to learn. So a lot of times I'm just staring at the surgery, just looking at the monitor, being like, it's really interesting. Like, so what exactly are you doing here? So I'm not saying I could perform an appendectomy, but I think I could talk someone through it pretty well, better than like a surgery resident, I would say. Better than a first year for sure. So yeah, I mean, there's so much going, it's such a dynamic environment. There's always something to be doing, so.
So after you took your 4 years in between college and med school, where did you end up going to med school?
I went to Stony Brook School of Medicine out in Stony Brook, Long Island. But I think now it's called Renaissance. But yeah, it's out in Stony Brook. Awesome place. It was, there aren't that many. I mean, so it's the further east you go out of Long Island, the less sparse, the more sparse it is in terms of population. So Stony Brook was the preeminent hospital in Suffolk County. And so we saw a lot of interesting cases. We saw a lot of intense surgeries. And again, I met some of my best friends in med school. So I love my time in med school. And to your point, Ashley, like one, you've got great skin, so dermatology would be perfect for you. And thanks. Two, I think I love the ride. And I mean, like, I know it's partly tongue in cheek that you're saying, you know, you want to be a dermatologist, but if you love
a little,
medicine,
it's like 50% serious.
Dude, the ride is good. You know, like med school is a lot of work, but like if you're doing what you really want to do and you're around people who are just so motivated and so smart, you're like, you can't help but all like feel like you're part of a special group. And again, it's such a privilege once you start doing clinical rotations, seeing like when I was in med school, I did finance before, and I was like, I used to go to these meetings and we're talking about like growth and, you know, growth charts.
You studied
charts and
finance before?
I didn't study finance. I did economic. I did consulting. So it was like
before going to med school.
Yeah.
So what'd you study in college?
I studied international affairs in college, actually. So very circuitous. Like, yeah. It's kind of like little jack of all trades, but I did international affairs in college. Then I did healthcare consulting in DC for 2 years. And then I did research, neuro-oncology research at Sloan Kettering in New York for 2 years. But during that time doing consulting, I'd go to these meetings, and the meetings would always be about like how to increase revenue, how to increase productivity, you know, normal things that companies have to worry about. And then I went to med school, and my meetings were like how the human body works and like how drugs affect the human body and like advances in cancer therapies. And I'm like, this is like what I have to do. Like just the juxtaposition of the two was so different and obviously so much more interesting and important, you know, in med school than in my role as a consultant. So kind of like reinforced, I'm like, man, I'm in the right place. And if I have to spend, you know, like a night instead of answering emails and working on a spreadsheet, if I have to study anatomy and figure out, oh, the four chambers of the heart and how like the Fabian veins work, like that is so much more interesting than again, like any of these Excel spreadsheets. And everybody would find it interesting. I mean, not everyone wants to spend that time, but like, I mean, I know like to know how your heart works. I mean, you don't even think about it, but it's beating 80 times a minute, every minute, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for hopefully 90 years of your life. And you don't think about it, right? And it's such a beautiful thing to know how we all work, you know? And it's, again, I loved it. And if you're really thinking about it, I say you go for it. Seriously.
I'm thinking about sometimes going into like a physician's assistant thing. So it's not 100% full school, you know, to that degree.
Yeah.
But, you know, like still being able to write prescriptions and like understand the human body on a very deep level.
Yeah. Yeah.
I say write prescriptions as if that's why I want. That's like the weirdest thing I could say. I just mean like, it's like, you know, you're just a step below doctor.
Yeah, no, you take care of people, which is the most important thing. You understand the human body and you take care of people with that knowledge. And that's what medicine is all about.
Well, speaking of taking care of people, you know, we love having people on this podcast, especially in depth, because we can dive into some stuff that really matters in this world. Not that The Bachelor doesn't, but it doesn't make the world go round. And it one of the things that are coming up recently is all the stories of Asian hate existing really around the globe. But, you know, focused here in the U.S. because that's where we're living and that's where we're functioning. To kind of dive into this conversation, if you don't mind just sharing your story, kind of what you're processing through this, what you're learning and hearing. And then I mean, Ashley and I would love to dig into this with you a little bit.
Sure. I mean, this past year has been, I think, a difficult time for everybody, literally everybody. The pandemic has been difficult for like the 6.7 billion people who live on this planet. In the US, you know, obviously with BLM, which, you know, really gained fervor last June, July, and continues, you know, to have that energy behind it. And yeah, recently, or not recently, but it's kind of been shown recently, or people are more, becoming more aware of the hate and violence that Asians are have been experiencing in the past year as well. And it kind of took a little bit of time for the numbers to come out, but recently the numbers came out that during 2020, there was 150% increase in violence directed and hate directed toward Asian Americans. And so, you know, personally, it's such a weird dynamic because here I am, right? Like me, Joe, Asian American, Korean American, parents are again, came from Korea. And I'm on, I have this platform with you guys, and thank you so much for having me and letting me talk about this seriously. But here I am talking to you guys about this on this podcast. I was on a reality television show on a major American network. We have our first Asian American vice president. We have Bong Joon-ho, who won Best Director. Parasite won Best Film last year, the Academy Awards. Chloe Zhao won the Golden Globe for Best Director for Nomadland. We have Steven Yeun, who's nominated for Best Actor at this year's Academy Awards. So on one hand, there's been so much progress, and this is maybe the best it's ever been. And so far from, you know, Mickey Rooney's portrayal of Mr. Inuyoshi in Breakfast at Tiffany's. Mm-hmm. At the same time, I know I see these stats, you know, 100% increase in hate and violence toward Asian Americans in 2020. I see videos of people, Asian men, women, elderly people who look like my mom and my dad getting attacked on a subway. I see young Asian Americans getting punched in the face unprovoked. And it's this stark contrast that it's hard to get wrap your head around. You know, it is both the best of times and the worst of times in so many ways. And it's definitely something that we're all coming to grips with, especially after the shootings in the suburbs around Atlanta, where again, 8 people died, 6 of whom were Asian American women. So it's definitely something that is becoming more recognized and more people are aware of it. And here we are talking about it. And I think that's how we move forward. You know, it's not something that we see and we experience and we hear about and we don't talk about. Like when there's a problem in a relationship or between anybody, between your coworker, between your parents, between your loved one, your partner, you gotta talk about it. And here we are talking about it. And again, that's the first step for sure.
One of the things, I mean, you just said it, but it's the best of times and the worst of times, which is a word that is now getting used a lot more, but it's a word that I think really encapsulates this whole time. It's disorienting, right? Like because it's the best of times and the worst of times. How do you process as an Asian American, the disorientation within it all and to see the future, like the what could become of the future?
So I think, again, it's, there have been so many groups in American history that have suffered. And I think with Asians especially, we are considered a model minority. We are considered a group that somehow has gained a special status. They're doing fine. When in reality, in a relative proportion, at least in New York City, there's a greater percentage of Asian American or Asians who are impoverished than any other race. Asians living in like tenements in Chinatown. It's just not talked about because the people in mainstream society you see are the doctors, are the finance people, are the lawyers. I just think that recognition of that is the first step. And again, I love that we can have this conversation. Again, even within the hate, best of times, worst of times. Now more people have heard about Vincent Chin, about the murder of an Asian American man in 1982. for no other reason aside from the color of his skin. More people are becoming or reacclimating themselves with Japanese internment camps during World War II, where American citizens were forcibly removed from their homes and put into internment camps. In the United States in the 1940s, we're learning about Fred Korematsu during that same era. And so there's a lot that people are being exposed to. And again, these conversations are what's going to help. Again, first is like that knowledge that, oh, shoot, I didn't even know about that. I didn't know, you know, China Exclusion Act of 1882. I'd never heard of that before. Maybe you hear about that. And if with an empathetic heart, you know, and a curious mind, a little bit of both, you learn more about it and you understand the struggles of a people, you know, who you can't obviously put into one, you know, single, like there's no monolithic Asian culture. You know, we are all individuals. And I think knowing the struggle that a group has already been through and it continues to go through, especially in this past year and currently, helps appreciate maybe a little bit like, man, you know, just straight up, my life would have been a lot easier if I was white. If I had the exact same stats, if I had the exact same grades, if I was the exact same everything, except for the pigment in my skin, I might be in a better place right now. And if someone had darker or their eyes were a little smaller, maybe I might be in a worse, like that, those people might be in a worse place for no other reason but that. I think just recognizing that would take us so far. I think that's kind of how I'm pressing. I think it's a terrible thing that's happening, obviously, to people who look like me, but also great that people are talking about it.
What do you think the correlation is between the rise of Asian hate this year and the coronavirus? Do you believe that there is?
I mean, without question, the rhetoric of the past administration did a lot of damage to or helped stoke the flames that, you know, it didn't cause it. You can't say it was the reason why people had, anytime there's something negative in anyone's life, especially on a big scale, it's human nature to want to blame something or someone. That's just human nature. And knowing where this, you know, this virus originated from, I think it's easy to say, you know, okay, well, it's because of these people, even though these people, anyone who's been attacked, I would bet any amount of money, they have zero connection to this middle-sized city, you know, on the other side of the globe. Like the idea that, you know, Noel Quintana, who got slashed from ear to ear on a New York City subway, has any relation to Wuhan, China, is insane. And I think that's, unfortunately, to people who want to blame, have, you know, give blame to something, to someone, people who are angry with their situation, and which a lot of people are, and understandably so, and they want to attribute blame. It's a natural human reaction to want to blame someone. And unfortunately, that blame has been put on people who look like me, you know, Asian Americans. And I think it's the same as like, what if instead of Asian Americans, all of a sudden we knew it came from people with freckles, and everyone's freckles, people were punching in the face on the street randomly, or saying like the nastiest things to, or being literally like with a box cutter sliced, like because they had freckles. It's the same thing. Or what if you had hazel eyes? What if it's people with hazel eyes spread the disease? Now everyone is like attacking people with hazel eyes. Like, I think that would help Americans of all colors and all, you know, from all backgrounds understand how arbitrary it is to attack any Asian American, you know, throw any like hateful words towards them, direct any hate towards them because of a random happenstance of genetics and mutations and animal transmissions that happen, again, completely randomly in this random city in China.
There's a long history of viruses being named after the place of origin, you know, Ebola, West Nile, Spanish flu. Do you feel like this is a pattern that needs to stop for this reason that we're seeing?
Thankfully, you know, the coronavirus is just a class of virus, but I think more, I think it's okay to understand origins of things. I don't think it's wrong to know, you know, how things came about, the reasons they came about, the antecedents. I think it's important to understand these things, but I think the next level is to educate all, you know, ourselves, in knowing that, like, because it comes from China, you know, a city in China, you know, one city that encapsulates 1.7 billion people who live there, you know, and has no relation, you know, that city has no relation probably to the rest of the country, and that, and nobody in the United States has any relation to that little city in that big country, you know, like, it's so, I think it just takes another level where it's like, just because it's named after something doesn't mean it's the fault of the people there, you know, that it exists. You know, that is a fact of globalization, you know, of, yeah, just the reality of the times we're living in. I mean, there's, you go on and on about why pandemics occur. And I think we're almost lucky that it hadn't happened earlier, you know. It could have happened in China, but it could have easily come out of, you know, Europe. You know, and I think, again, it doesn't matter, but it's like the first cases of the coronavirus spread from Asia to Europe and then to the United States. So, but again, it doesn't matter. You know, like, we're all sharing this burden together, and pandemics happen. It sounds crazy, but they happen. And hopefully it won't happen again in our lifetimes, but it's going to happen again. It's not the fault of the place of origin that it happens. Like, it's just a fault of biology and you know, human globalization and interaction with different species of animals. But anyway, that's just a different conversation altogether.
The thing that this is bringing up, and I really would love to hear your perspective on it. And so, you know, 2020 has been an interesting year, right? Because, as you said, there's a burden that we're all universally carrying. But in the midst of that, we've had some movements come up, some knowledge that have been brought to the attention of especially the American people, to say there's some injustice going on in the world. These things have been happening for hundreds upon hundreds of years. Now it's in front of us, and it's almost like it feels like almost time. Okay, what's the decision you're going to make? Are you going to choose to start to try to heal and to help, or to hurt more and to change your rhetoric to be even more hurtful? Okay, so what I'm getting at is, how do we now, in the midst of knowing there's so much injustice that is around us every day, how do we get in front of it as people so that it doesn't happen to have to have 150% increase in violence, and it doesn't have to have the death of people of color at the hands of others for us to finally take notice? So in your life right now, because you're a smart dude who I know I can learn a lot from, how are you now paying attention and staying curious to what other injustices are happening around us so that it doesn't take this again?
That's a really, really good question. I think all of us, myself included, I think we all have preconceived notions. And that's, again, that's the human condition to have that. That's part of how we just, you know, this is how we operate. But just to know, I think, one, as far as hate goes, first level, I think, is empathy. And just knowing, kind of what I've been saying kind of already, I feel like it's on a broken record, but just knowing that person in front of you, whoever, whatever color, whatever, you know, race, whatever religion, wherever they're from, whatever gender, like, you may not know who they are, but what you do know, what you probably do know, you don't know where they're from, you know, you don't know how they grew up, you don't know the struggles they went through, but what you probably do know is they want the same things that you want out of life. They want to be loved. They want to be heard. They want to feel appreciated. They have family that they care about, or friends that they really care about and want to be safe. They want their needs met. And so, knowing that, again, like, how much we all are the same, I think that is the first step. Like, you know, that Nigerian immigrant I don't know him or her at all, but I do know, you know, as an immigrant, as a child of immigrants, I know how the struggle. When I hear an accent, I don't think like, oh man, what are you doing here? I think, man, like, it took you that much. You know another language fluently, but it took you that much to learn another language. How many Americans know two languages? You know, like, it's a fault of America, but like, when I hear an accent, I'm like, good for you, man, or girl. Like, you know, like, thank you for putting in that effort to like meet me at my level. And I think just, again, keeping it, having that empathy, which is kind of a function that makes us human. Having that empathy is like such, is like that first step. And just pause and all, like, whatever preconceived hate or negative you have towards somebody or some group, just think for a second, like, what don't you know about this? Like, what do you really know about that person on the street? What do you really know about that person or that person next to you or that person on the subway or that person, like, you know, anywhere? And like, how much, again, as a human being, do you think you can relate with? You know, like, I just think there's so much more we all have in common. I think once you realize that, like, we'd all be good, you know, Asian, Black, like, whatever you are, wherever you are, I think that's the thing that binds us all, you know, like, we're all doing the best we can, like I said, to start this thing. And that's where it starts, you know, everyone's just trying their best.
You're the best, Joe Park. You're awesome.
I will say on a societal level, though, I do think, like, again, I do think representation in the government, in government and in social media, like, there's also populations to get a little more in like middle America who've never met an Asian person. They've never met a Jewish person. Maybe they don't never met a Black person before. And so that's why, like, social media, like, media matters. That's why, like, Black Panther was such a breakthrough, right? To have a predominantly African-American cast as like heroes, someone on your like on your wall, you have Black, you know, like Black Panther. And why I'm so happy about the strides that Asian American cinematography has made, because there's this push pull between like norms and ideas in society and social media, and not social media, but and media, mass media. And sometimes, a lot of times, and I think unfortunately, The Bachelor is just, again, reflective of society, but there's sometimes where, like, again, hopefully with this, I think right now, this Asian and Asian American renaissance in movies, it's like, there's this pull that's like, yo, like, there's some really good actors and great filmmakers. And it makes me think, like, they're not just the karate, the guy who knows karate, or the computer expert, or the dorky dude, you know, like, there are levels to this, as there are to any everybody. So anyway.
Well, you were one of the few Asian men on The Bachelorette. Why do you think there's been so few? Do you think it's for lack of applicants or just casting choices?
Actually, that is such a fair question. And I really think it's probably more the former. I mean, to be on this show, I remember I talked about this when I was there. There's so many, like, and you guys both know this, there's so many, like, things you have to go, like, filters you have to go through. You need a certain, like, you need to have a certain amount of time off, mm-hmm. first of all, to be able to go on the show. You need to be a certain, like, age range. You need to, honestly, probably have a certain look, like, a, you know, and physique. You have to go through some other, like, health related tests they have to go through. So to distill all of that down, and also to know, again, the audience it attracts, and who watches this, the demographic of the people who watch the show, who are fans of the show. I really think, like, I wonder how many Asian people apply to be on the show. I would imagine very, very few. And so, in fairness to the franchise, I kind of think it's a bit of both, you know, like, I don't know how many people, Asians, could fit all these filters. It'd be tough. So it's a fair question.
Excuse me for not being able to word this as eloquently as I would like. I feel like the Asian community has certain values that perhaps don't align with the franchise. Do you think that could be why there are fewer of that race that apply?
I think that's a fair point, Ashley. And I thank you for being even, like, comfortable enough to ask that, you know, seriously, because that's worded perfectly. I think that's fair. I think, you know, as a culture, we're just told to just, hey, like, just work hard. Like, don't try to stand out too much. Be humble. Being on television in front of like 6 million people is like the opposite of like most of the values, especially of people who are like children of immigrants, you know, especially immigrants. Like, yo, like, don't make a scene. Just like let your, like, the body of your work speak for itself, you know. Get the grades, you know, excel in the arts, in athletics. I mean, it's just like, speak excellent and let that, you know, show anyone who wants to see it, or any thing you apply to, let that be evidence of who you are. Not like go on a TV show and like show the world, you know, like how brave or how stupid you are, whatever you want to say we are on that show. So I think that's fair. Yeah. I think that's probably part of it too. Like, no, I don't think anybody was like, I don't know how many people grow up and say, oh man, I can't wait. I really want to be on a reality television show. I don't think very few people say that, but I think none of my Asian friends growing up said that. So,
well, Joe, we appreciate you having this conversation with us. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we have a few more minutes left with you. We're going to talk about this rumor that's swirling around that you are the first confirmed contestant in Bachelor in Paradise. We're going to find out if that's true or not. And then we also have a little game that Ashley always loves to play with our guests. We'll be back with Dr. Joe Park on the Almost Famous podcast.
There's nothing like having a clean space. I can't say that I have it a ton with a toddler, but when I do, it's magical. And I also love it when I can add a little bit of my own sort of favorite candle, favorite scent, favorite throw blanket, you know, just express your personal style while the space is perfectly clean. Well, that's where Clorox Scentiva comes in, because Clorox have these clean scents that'll fit your vibe. With coconut, grapefruit, or lavender, you can discover your own signature scent. It's clean. So it's that trusted clean that you know that you get with Clorox, and it's captivating with scents that just can speak to you. With a powerful, clean, and refreshing scent, Clorox Scentiva cleans like Clorox and feels like confidence. Get yours now at a retail store near you. Diaper duty. It's the adventure no one warns you about when you're expecting, right? Well, fear not. Pampers Swaddlers features a blowout barrier at the back waist that helps prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Not only are Pampers Swaddlers total game changers, they have the hottest baby gift trend for 2024, the Pampers Diaper Stash, an online diaper fund where friends and family can contribute a group gift so that your diaper stockpile never runs out. I love this idea. Here's how it works. You create a diaper stash account, share it with your tribe, watch the stash grow, gift it to the parents, and voila. They use the stash funds to snag Pampers diapers and wipes anywhere, anytime. It's not just a gift. It's a stash of joy, ensuring that those parents-to-be are stocked up without the guesswork. So whether you're a parent in the trenches or the ultimate gift guru, make 2024 the year of leak-free happiness. Pamper Swaddlers and the Diaper Stash. Because parenting should be an extraordinary journey, not a messy one.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Ashley, is it true that some contestants have cashed in their 401k to afford a new wardrobe for The Bachelor?
I mean, you do need a lot of ball gowns when you think about it. Where did you hear that rumor, Ben?
Oh, Smart Money Happy Hour. It's a podcast where two money experts, Rachel Cruz and George Camel, talk totally unfiltered about life, pop culture, and how to afford it all with 90s nostalgia and reality TV fandom mixed in, of course.
So, like, how to budget for a hot date in Malta, like Joey went on?
Yeah. Or how to baby step your way to being a millionaire before you're 35.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at this episode on how much people spend on dating apps. So one guy is spending $499 a month.
He should really apply for The Bachelorette.
Or this one episode, which is what our Amazon purchase history says about us.
Why don't you just go and tap that subscribe button, Ashley?
Say less. This is really, really interesting. So to check it out, you can search Smart Money Happy Hour and listen wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Smart Money Happy Hour and hit that subscribe button, which I just did. Your wallet and your next road trip will thank you.
Let's talk about something we all can relate to. Hair removal. Yeah, not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Nicks, cuts, razor burns. Ugh. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. For real, Nair's new scents turned my bathroom into a spa.
You guys, I remember when my mom gave me like the first bottle of Nair to use on my upper lip, and I was like, this is so awful, but I do like need to do it. But the smell so close to my nose for so long. The worst part of like the every other week or whatever I would do it. Now it smells incredible. Like there's Moroccan argan oil and orange blossom shower cream that you can use. It's like a pampering experience. You put it on your legs, let it sit there for a little bit. And it's so much better than shaving. They also have like rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, soothing aloe and water lily body cream. Really anything you could think of to get rid of your hair in the most pleasant way, Nair has it. They have new shower and body creams that are so easy to apply, and they work in as little as 3 minutes. And if you're going to shave more parts than just your legs, think about what you can do in 3 minutes with Nair. And the skin smooth feeling lasts so much longer than shaving. Like I just mentioned, you can use it not just on your legs, but on your arms, your underarms, even your bikini area. And we all know that with summer around the corner, that's a place you need it. Nair has turned the hair removal process into a sensorial experience. The scents are just amazing. And when I say that my bathroom smells like a spa, I really mean it. So check it out. The new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
All right, now for the question our audience has been waiting for, Joe. Are you going to paradise like Rob Mills tweeted? I remember the last time you spoke with us back in November, you said that you hoped to be in a relationship by the time filming rolled around. So what's up?
You know, sometimes your hopes go unfulfilled, and that is the case with this whole relationship thing as well. As far as paradise, you know, yeah, I saw the tweet, and I saw a couple articles on in a few like prominent like magazines doing like a deep dive. Yeah. So to that, I would say, I am not confirmed to go to paradise. I'm not sure it's my vibe.
They didn't get permission exactly to put that out there.
No.
Well, we're going to wait and see about this because Dr. Joe, you might not know it yet, but I think you've already been signed up for Paradise. So you better start figuring out how to get that time off, because the headlines.
I've been eating ice cream, a pint of ice cream, like 4 times a week. I hope it's not. I'm not ready.
You'll be just fine.
Well, if you were going to Paradise, do your parents like watching a show? Like, is this something that they enjoy doing from you on The Bachelorette? Like, are they pushing it and pumped for it? My parents are always kind of like nervous. I don't know if they're ever that excited, but I know they're into it.
I think my parents were similar in the sense they were nervous for me. Like, is this something you really want to do? Like, what do you want to gain from this? Like, yeah. What are you really trying to get out of this? And I tell them, you know, I'm doing it for the followers, baby. Like, I just want the Instagram. I just tell them, like, yeah, it's just a random thing to do. And, like, you know, you only live once. And it's just like, again, like, I tell them, like, look at your story. Look at, you know, James's, my older brother's story. Look at my younger brother's story. Like, lightning can strike, you know, it's struck a couple of times already in our family. Like, who's to say it can't happen again? And so I say, like, you know, I'll try not to embarrass you. I can't make any promises. Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder what would happen had I lost that we played strip dodgeball in my season on the Bachelor. I wonder what would have happened if I lost, you know, like, thank God I never had to go, you know, have to face that. But I think they just really want to make sure it's something that I want. And again, if I decided, they support it. And so that's why they're good parents.
That's right. Well, we'll wait and see. We'll be fancy here. We'll hopefully have you back on. You've been a friend of the podcast. You've been on a few times now. We always appreciate it. So if you do confirm, or if you don't, you still matter to us. And we do always hope to be watching you. Now, here's a part. We're going to get into Bachelor headlines in just a second with you. We're going to speed through those. But before we do, to close this segment of Dr. Joe Park's in-depth episode, Ashley always has a rapid fire round with our guest, and she has definitely set one up for you. So Ashley, take it away.
Sure. Okay, what is your favorite case to do anesthesia on?
Ooh, that's a good question. I like knee replacements. It's weird.
That's so random.
I'll tell you why. One, I love taking care of elderly patients. Like, kids and elderly are my favorite. But elderly patients are like the realest people ever. And I love just the realness. Like, hey, how you doing? They're like, that's a great doc. You know, like, I'm here in a hospital. Like, what do you mean? And I just love their realness. And with that, you actually do a bunch of nerve blocks after the procedure. It's kind of fun to like do something that's like, not just like treating them and keeping them comfortable, but also somewhat therapeutic, and helps them with their pain after the procedure for the next day. And it's a lot of, it's like anatomy and it's like technical skill. And again, all that together is that's what's part of like a joint, like a knee replacement. And so and orthopedic surgeons are pretty fun. They're pretty like a fun group, so I appreciate like their personalities and stuff too. So
they were usually the jocks in school. That's
They're bros. They're definitely bros. Like, no medical like stereotype is more true. Sorry, I don't touch on stereotypes all the time, but like when you see that tall jacked dude, you're like, that guy's not a big surgeon. Like, you just know it, you know, it's you can see it from a mile away. So yeah,
usually the surgeons pick the music in the OR. So what are you usually excited to hear?
You know, that's true. In our ORs, it's more diplomatic. And recently yesterday we listened to a little Lauryn Hill Unplugged. You know, to bring it back to The Bachelor, we all loved, I'm sure, like, we're all kind of in the same age range, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill. Mm-hmm. And that was a seminal record, you know, album. And she had a great Unplugged album in 2002. And I Gotta Find Peace of Mind, Matt James had on his like recent like post. And I was like, man, I haven't got that song in years. And so I know it's not exactly a question, but that was one song I played recently. And the orthopedic surgeon was like vibing with it too. And he's like, she messes up here. And I was like, oh, dude, like, again, another reason why, again, I love doing orthopedic procedures. And that was kind of like the most memorable song and song choice that a recent memory.
Awesome. What is your typical night look like when you get home from work?
You know, normally I get home from work, I pound some energy drinks, and I do a podcast. That's pretty much, this is pretty
no,
much
no, that's normal, what you're doing now. What do you normally do?
Yeah. No, normally I'll play a little guitar. I do like Spanish tutoring online. I have like a weight, I have an adjustable weight in my closet over here. So I'll like do like a workout, and now the weather's getting great. I have a couple of goals for like this next year, and a marathon's one of them. So I've been running a lot, and the weather's getting better, so I'm running a lot. So yeah, New York in the spring is beautiful. So
the more you speak, yeah, the more I wonder how the hell you're single. I think it's that you haven't found somebody worthy of you yet. What was your last date? When was it? And what did you do?
You know, it was pre-show. This is like,
you haven't gone on a date pre-show, post-show, since you've become like The Bachelor.
This is not like podcast like reality, like reality. This is like reality, the sad reality. Yeah, it's true. It's a weird thing, and you guys can relate. Like, and I know Ben, last time around, you're like, yo, like look at those DMs. But I did not heed your advice. I've just been kind of like, again, I was kind of hoping it happens kind of like naturally, kind of in the real world, kind of. But during the pandemic, it's obviously tough. So the last date I went on was months before the show. I went on a hike. This is true. So with a girl, and I before the show contacted me. So it was like early, like pre-spring, like right, like peri-spring, right as it was turning to spring. Weather was getting good. Went on a hike. And probably about a year ago. Yeah, I could look at my phone, look at pictures. It was a beautiful day. And I'd seen this person a few times. And on the last time I saw her, as we were driving back from this hike, she was like, I should probably tell you something. I was like, yeah, you know, it was a great time. I should probably tell you something. And she said, I'm married. And oh. I was like, and she was not from the US. I was like, wait, did you say you were married? And she was like, no, I said, I'm married. And you could kind of probably imagine how the conversation went from there. So that was all fun.
Wow. All
so right. it's only up from there. You know what I'm saying? Like I'm starting at a very low place. I think from there I could just, everything is, better than that.
Okay. Well, I think we're going to move on now to some of our headlines. And we would love if you could join us for some of them, because your friend, Bennett, who you've hang out with a good amount of time and recently did from, was it Top of the Rock that you guys did the flying scene from?
The Edge
now? Yes. Oh, okay. Sorry. They rebranded. Yeah. Okay. So you did.
Different site. Different place.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Really cool.
You guys pretended to be Jack and Rose, but it looks like Bennett wants Kelly to be his Rose. He threw a shot out there on Instagram this week saying that she caught his eye. So you think that there could be some romance there if they both end up in paradise?
Oof, that's a great question. First of all, I want to give a shout out to Bennett because before that, we went to an AAPI rally and I told him, hey, I'll meet you there. I'm going to this rally. Bennett's like, if you're going, I'm going. You know, I want to support. So he came to an anti-Asian hate rally with me beforehand. So obviously, I love the man for that. But but to that point, you know, Kelly Flanagan catches a lot of people's eyes, in fairness. So is he one of the pairs of eyes that she has caught? Yeah, I think so. I absolutely think so. Yeah, she's super intelligent. She's super attractive. Like, I think a lot of people are shooting their shot. He's just very obvious about it. And he's a confident guy, very good looking, very successful. And why wouldn't he want to take that shot? I definitely think there might be something there on Paradise. If they both find themselves there, I would. Chance of sparks is very high.
Could there be some hostility between you and him for Kelly if you guys both ended up there? Because it sounded like you just praised her.
I don't know Kelly at all, and I didn't see that season with Peter. I actually didn't meet Peter. Peter and I play on a flag football team now, so I know Peter. I don't know Kelly. But if we meet, and if I want, if I go in paradise too, if we meet, three, if we get along, then yeah, there might be some, you know, there might be a little tension there, but we'll see. You know, a lot of ifs there, but you know, we're two gentlemen. I feel like we can work it out amicably, or we'll just have to do like a gun duel, one or the other. We'll see.
Next headline, Joe, that we'd love for you to share your insight on is Kathryn Lowry calls facing damaging racial slurs and powerful plea to end anti-Asian violence. This is according to E! News. Joe, when you hear this and read this, did you experience anything like this? And the story goes on to say this, just so you have some background. At a very young age, The Bachelor's Kathryn Lowe writes in an essay to E! My sisters and I were called mongrels because my Filipino mother had children with a Caucasian man. Joe, when you hear this headline, you read that quote, what do you think?
You know, it's hurtful. And I think all of us, you know, who grew up, honestly, I think everyone who didn't grow up white in a predominantly white area, and I assume she did, or non-Asian area, which is pretty much every area outside of like parts of California, we all experienced some level of you know, racism when we grow up. And it's hurtful, and unfortunately, like when we're young, you know, we don't live our life backwards. It's like there's some things that when we're young, and I just attribute a certain age, but like when our hormones are like still like kind of like forming and our brain is still like so undercooked, it's still so doughy, that it's when it solidifies, even though we can rationalize, oh, these were just, you know, children, they didn't know any better, and I bet now they do, still, like, once that hormone on that experience has solidified, that's still, you still feel it. And I feel her pain. And again, I'm just happy that maybe it took this moment for her to talk about that. And maybe that's like some catharsis for her to say, hey, like, here's my story. And now people are willing to listen to it in this moment, especially. And here we are talking about it again. And so I think it's great. And I applaud her for her courage and her bravery to be able to talk about this painful memory. Obviously, it's not easy to talk about, especially in a public forum. And so I think a lot of people, you know, of every background who's any other of any form will relate. And hopefully they'll know, hey, like, and I was okay. And it still hurt. That hurt doesn't go away. But like, you'll be all right, too. You know, just like get through it. And hopefully, and again, times are changing, hopefully. And so I just want, yeah, just thank her for doing that.
The final headline that we really wanted to read through with you and to hear if you could relate or if you felt this as well, is Sydney Latuaco from Colton Season said she felt the pressure of the entire Asian race filming The Bachelor. That's the headline according to Us Weekly.
I didn't really think about it because I didn't watch the show. I had no idea of the paucity of Asians on the franchise until I was there. And like some of the producers I was very close with, like, would say, hey, just by the way, man, like, we haven't had people like you on before, like, your story is not the normal story. And I think while I was there, I kind of started thinking about it more. And I said this on Nick Vial's podcast, and I'll say it again, there's this one handler there. I'm gonna say his name, I don't care. His name's Tino. I love Tino. Tino, I love you, man. He was such a great guy. And we would talk late at night, and at times when I was like feeling down, or like I was like, man, like what am I doing here? You guys know the long nights. I'll just be reminded of this Jay-Z quote from H to Izzo, which is, I do this for my culture. And a little bit, I was like, yo, you're representing yourself first and foremost, but also your family. And maybe to like so many people, especially honestly in middle America, in the South, who maybe haven't seen an Asian man before, or like in life, and not even in like on TV and in movies, like maybe you might be one of the first people there getting to know a little bit. And so, yeah, he felt it a little bit. And so I definitely empathize with her in that way.
Well, before we let you go, you got to create a headline for us now. If you were to go to paradise, who do you want to see there?
That's so easy. Brendan.
You took the easy way out. You took the easy way out.
That's so sweet, though. It's very sweet. It was almost so sweet that I'm going to say just as good as if you gave us a girl's name.
Well, Joe, Dr. Joe Park, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to continue with Bachelor Headlines, but we're going to let you go so you can get some rest. You can learn some Spanish, play your guitar, drink some more energy drinks, stay awake for as long as possible. Really appreciate you, man. Been great getting to know you better, and we hope to see you back here soon.
So wonderful having you.
Ashley, Ben, it's always great being on your podcast, and thank you so much for inviting me. Seriously, it was great to talk to you, and thank you for your thoughtful questions and everything else.
You're the man. Hey, we'll talk to you soon, Joe. We're going to take a break here with the Almost Famous podcast. When we come back, we're going to continue with Bachelor Headlines.
There's nothing like having a clean space. I can't say that I have it a ton with a toddler, but when I do, it's magical. And I also love it when I can add a little bit of my own sort of favorite candle, favorite scent, favorite throw blanket, you know, just express your personal style while the space is perfectly clean. Well, that's where Clorox Scentiva comes in, because Clorox have these clean scents that'll fit your vibe. With coconut, grapefruit, or lavender, you can discover your own signature scent. It's clean, so it's that trusted clean that you know that you get with Clorox, and it's captivating with scents that's just can speak to you. With a powerful, clean, and refreshing scent, Clorox Scentiva cleans like Clorox and feels like confidence. Get yours now at a retail store near you. Diaper duty. It's the adventure no one warns you about when you're expecting, right? Well, fear not. Pampers Swaddlers features a blowout barrier at the back waist that helps prevent up to 100% of leaks, even blowouts. Not only are Pampers Swaddlers total game changers, they have the hottest baby gift trend for 2024, the Pampers Diaper Stash, an online diaper fund where friends and family can contribute a group gift so that your diaper stockpile never runs out. I love this idea. Here's how it works. You create a diaper stash account, share it with your tribe, watch the stash grow, gift it to the parents, and voila. They use the stash funds to snag Pampers diapers and wipes anywhere, anytime. It's not just a gift. It's a stash of joy. Ensuring that those parents-to-be are stocked up without the guesswork. So whether you're a parent in the trenches or the ultimate gift guru, make 2024 the year of leak-free happiness. Pampers Swaddlers and the diaper stash. Because parenting should be an extraordinary journey, not a messy one.
Hi, everyone. This is Rachel Zoe with the Climbing in Heels podcast. We recently sat down with a few recipients of the Botox Cosmetic, Onobotulinum Toxin A, and iFund Women grants at South by Southwest, thanks to Botox Cosmetic. Take a listen to our conversation. It's so good.
What advice would you give to upcoming like female entrepreneurs or just already sort of established trying to survive still?
I literally joke with my staff and we always are saying, oh, you want to be an entrepreneur? You want to be broke all the time and working 24/7? Ooh.
Yeah, but
so,
look at you.
Yeah, right? But I'm here. So the advice that I give is, and I coined this, and I believe I said it on my TED Talk, that your passion follows you. You cannot follow your passion. So my advice is to let your passion follow you, get out of your own way, and never stop and never settle.
This episode was brought to you by Botox Cosmetic. Learn more at BotoxCosmetic.com and talk to your specialist to see if Botox Cosmetic is right for you. For full prescribing information, including boxed warning, call 877-351-0300 and follow the Climbing in Heels podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe where you listen to your podcast.
Ashley, is it true that some contestants have cashed in their 401k to afford a new wardrobe for The Bachelor?
I mean, you do need a lot of ball gowns when you think about it. Where did you hear that rumor, Ben?
Oh, Smart Money Happy Hour. It's a podcast where two money experts, Rachel Cruz and George Camel, talk totally unfiltered about life, pop culture, and how to afford it all with 90s nostalgia and reality TV fandom mixed in, of course.
So like how to budget for a hot date in Malta, like Joey went on.
Yeah. Or how to baby step your way to being a millionaire before you're 35.
Oh, okay. I'm looking at this episode on how much people spend on dating apps. So one guy is spending $499 a month.
He should really apply for the Bachelorette.
Or this one episode, which is what our Amazon purchase history says about us.
Why don't you just go and tap that subscribe button, Ashley?
Say less. This is really, really interesting. So to check it out, you can search Smart Money Happy Hour and listen wherever you get your podcasts. Just search Smart Money Happy Hour and hit that subscribe button, which I just did. Your wallet and your next road trip will thank you.
Let's talk about something we all can relate to. Hair removal. Yeah, not exactly the highlight of our day, right? Nicks, cuts, razor burns. Ugh. But guess what? Nair, the OG, has taken hair removal to the next level with their new sensational shower and body creams that smell amazing. Literally the best thing ever. For real, Nair's new scents turned my bathroom into a spa.
You guys, I remember when my mom gave me like the first bottle of Nair to use on my upper lip, and I was like, this is so awful, but I do like need to do it. But the smell so close to my nose for so long. The worst part of like the every other week or whatever I would do it. Now it smells incredible. Like there's Moroccan argan oil and orange blossom shower cream that you can use. It's like a pampering experience. You put it on your legs, let it sit there for a little bit. And it's so much better than shaving. They also have like rich cocoa butter and vitamin E body cream, soothing aloe and water lily body cream. Really anything you could think of to get rid of your hair in the most pleasant way, Nair has it. They have new shower and body creams that are so easy to apply and they work in as little as 3 minutes. And if you're going to shave more parts than just your legs, think about what you can do in 3 minutes with Nair. And the skin smooth feeling lasts so much longer than shaving. Like I just mentioned, you can use it not just on your legs, but on your arms, your underarms, even your bikini area. And we all know that with summer around the corner, that's a place you need it. Nair has turned the hair removal process into a sensorial experience. The scents are just amazing. And when I say that my bathroom smells like a spa, I really mean it. So check it out. The new and improved body creams and shower creams from Nair, the number one hair removal brand. Smell for yourself. Try the reformulated Nair body and shower creams available at retailers nationwide and online.
It's always a pleasure having a guest on and doing an in-depth episode. These are some of our favorite in the off season. Dr. Joe Park was incredible. We're going to finish the podcast here with Bachelor headlines that are happening right now as we speak. We're going to start with this. Matt James has returned to Instagram. He wipes The Bachelor from his profile. This is according to Us Weekly.
Yeah, super interesting. So we all know, or if you listen to this podcast, you know that last week he deleted all the photos from his Instagram, anything that was promotional of The Bachelor. Now, the only photo that refers to The Bachelor is his response to the Chris Harrison interview. He also has listed he's not The Bachelor in his bio or anything like that. He has listed real estate as his profession, CBRE as his place of work. He says that he's a believer and that life revolves around his work at the ABC food tours. And so it seems like he's trying to put The Bachelor in his past, literally and figuratively.
He is back on Instagram, though. Matt James can be seen back on Instagram. Well, next headline is this. Inside Claire Crawley's very romantic 40th birthday getaway with Dale Moss is according to E! News.
Yep. Last week we told you that the two of them were spotted giving each other mask kisses in New York City. Well, it looks like he followed her back to California for the last week of March for her 40th birthday. They went to Napa. They were by the pool together. They had champagne. It was, according to a source, everything that Claire wanted for her birthday.
Happy 40th to Claire Crawley. And it sounds like her and Dale are still hanging out. We'll call it that for now. In a recent interview, Sydney Lotaco, who we just spoke about with Dr. Joe Park a second ago with Us Weekly, she revealed a lot. It's a great interview. I recommend everybody going out and checking it out. It's with their Here for the Right Reasons podcast. But she also says this, Sydney Lotaco recalls Bachelor Colton Underwood playing favorites. He had the most contestants quit, she says. This is according to Us Weekly.
Yeah, basically, that's basically the headline is the article. She said that it was obvious that he was playing favorites and that it wasn't like, didn't make them feel good about themselves seeing him look at other girls a certain way and then not give them attention. And that was kind of what put the nail in the coffin for her when she decided to leave on her own.
Blake Hortzman reveals why he doesn't regret releasing Kaylin Miller Key's text after Bachelor in Paradise drama. This is according to Us Weekly as well.
So if you guys remember during that season of Bachelor in Paradise, which was almost a year and a half ago, there was a lot of he said, she said, and Blake put out some texts that happened between him and Kaylin during that infamous Stagecoach weekend. And he said that he's never going to feel guilty for defending himself and for showing up to fight for himself. He said that he was told that he shouldn't put anything out about it. As a show, they didn't want him releasing anything that happened off the show. So, but he said, I can't. I have to defend myself.
Well, in a recently released text thread that is getting a lot of conversation going right now, Evan Bass jokes about Carly Waddell split and dating again during brief Instagram return. This according to Us Weekly also.
This is all just very silly. Evan was in Mexico and he was there getting dental surgery. And the night before, he was just texting with Carly. And they were kind of, it seemed a little bit flirty, like a little tongue-in-cheek about, I believe, if he died in surgery, who she would marry next. So there was like some silliness there. And there was like a little bit of playfulness because of his Italian heritage and like that she should never marry another Italian again. The bottom line to me from this story is that Carly and Evan are still talking and they are in a playful sense. So who knows what could come of this? That being said, when asked on Instagram whether or not he and Carly could get back together again, he quoted Humpty Dumpty, which was, "If all the king's horses and all the king's men, ... we know the rest of the rhyme. Couldn't put Humpty Dumpty back together again." So I think that's alluding to them not being able to figure it out. Who knows? Stay tuned.
It's wild. Well, speaking of former Bachelor couples, Bachelorette's Ashley Hebert reunites with estranged husband J.P. Rosenbaum, says they're best friends forever after a split. This is according to Us Weekly.
Yeah. This is kind of surprising to me. It just seemed like they didn't end on like the most positive note, but over the weekend, she posted an Insta story of the two of them together, and she said, "Too cool for school, too cool for school," as she teased in a playful way again her strange husband. And she captioned the Instagram story, "Best friends forever," which is great. I'm glad that they're on such good terms.
Well, The Bachelorette's Jason Tardik reveals plans to start a family with Caitlin Bristowe. This is according to Hollywood Life.
Yeah, it's a juicy headline, but there's not much to go with it. But we can confirm that they're both wanting a family. And he said that in an ideal world, they would love to have twins. I think they just want to bang it out. But he said, "I think we're in the perfect situation for kids. Twins would be nice, but just a happy kid would be what we desire."
Well, in the final headline, and also some more baby news, inside pregnant Lauren Burnham and Ari Lyandike Jr.'s Hawaii baby moon ahead of twins' birth.
I know. The two of them went on a baby moon this week. All the photos are on Instagram. Cute content for sure. So follow that. I feel like Hawaii is a very special place for them. I think they baby mooned there. Did they baby moon there last time? I'm not sure, but that's where they got married.
It's a special time. Well, this has been another Almost Famous podcast, an in-depth episode with Dr. Joe Park. I want to thank Dr. Joe Park for coming on and giving us so much time. Ashley, as always, you're the best. We're going to be back next week with another episode of Almost Famous podcast. Until then, I've been Ben.
And I've been Ashley. Toodaloo, y'all.
Follow the Ben and Ashley I, Almost Famous podcast on iHeartRadio or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Child-proofing people's homes is hard, but Duracell is making it just a bit simpler. Not only are they committed to educating parents, caregivers, and medical professionals about the importance of battery safety, they also make the only lithium coin batteries with a non-toxic bitter coating to help discourage children from swallowing them. Duracell even features child-secure packaging designed to avoid accidental opening. Learn more at Duracell.com/power safely, available on 2032, 2025, and 2016 sizes.
With the new Dexcom G7, you can achieve better diabetes results without painful fingersticks. It sends your glucose numbers to your compatible phone or watch so you can always see where you are and where you're heading. See how food and exercise affects your glucose, making it easier to spend more time in range and lower your A1C. Take more control of your diabetes with the number one recommended CGM brand. It's easy to get started today at Dexcom.com. That's Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com/compatibility.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit RightRug.com. That's RiteRug.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.